You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room with Bobby Warshaw and Matt Doyle. David Goss is cavorting around Cascadia right now, which it's not the best time to do so. Tough times in Cascadia. Can I just say that?
Yeah, it was not a great weekend for Cascadia, was it? I hadn't even registered. I guess there's something about David being out
there. Yeah, so the timing of all this is a little bit strange. Unfortunately,
bringing the negative vibes.
Yeah, unfortunately for Dave. Unfortunately for us, because there will be no negative vibes in the green room today. We've got a good show. It's a big show. There's a lot to get to. Our mailbag, I have to say, is as good a mailbag as we've ever had. It is highlighted by an email, more like a Slack conversation from Simon in Queens. After Jesmyn came up last week, I had to check in with Simon about Jesmyn. So you'll get a little Simon Borg in this show. MLS Week 30, top to bottom. Brad O'Reilly Phillips' yellow cards and comments. LA Galaxy got a shutout. They got a shutout against the Sounders. The Union, you know. Bobby Warshaw's out here. Like,
it was a good week for Bobby's brand.
Yeah, he's popping wheelies.
It was
wheelies.
A good week for Bobby's brand.
The only question I want to ask about the Union on this show is if they would win the West by 6 points or 9 points.
The Union, by the way, have a negative goal differential, which it shocked me to see when I looked at the playoff standings this morning. Of course, MLSsoccer.com/standings is basically going to be your home away from home for the rest of the season. Just about a month remaining here. We've already given out the Canadian Championship. Toronto FC almost had CCL. Now we have another piece of silverware up for grabs. It's the U.S. Open Cup. It's going down on Wednesday. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, will be there. We are doing the post-game show. Somehow, someway, Bobby did not get the invite, and it still hurts my soul. Kalen Carr will be there, repping the Houston Dynamo side. I, of course, will be there to anchor the coverage. And David Goss will be roaming around BBVA Compass Stadium, just trying to find content, interviews, behind-the-scenes footage. Last year we captured Peter Vermees' post-game speech, which was really, really special. 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2, Univision Deportes. That's how you can watch it. Extra Time Live immediately following the trophy ceremony. We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, basically all of those MLS channels. If you don't follow us on Facebook, Extra Time Live, go give us that follow and you'll get the show right to you. Let's see. I don't know. Let's get right to it. And let's start with the Supporters Shield race. Because Atlanta United are in control. Mm-hmm. 63 points through 30 games. The Red Bulls, 59 points through 30 games. Both teams won this weekend. Both teams meet next Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Red Bulls took down Toronto FC. Done and dusted, Toronto. The Reds are – it's done.
It's done.
Jozy Altidore is leaving in the middle of the game. Javinko did it the game before. Just call it.
Yeah. This week was their season in a nutshell. Injuries to – They're two best players, a couple of unfortunate blunders at the back. The only thing that wasn't perfectly aligned with the rest of their 2018 was that they made their penalty kick. If they had missed their penalty kick, then it would have been perfectly 2018. At this point, I think if you're Greg Vanney, you play the kids and, you know, maybe tank for a better draft pick. But for the Red Bulls, they still have a ton to play for. It does really come down to this game. They want their third supporter shield in six seasons. They have to win this one. It doesn't guarantee them that, obviously, but they have to win this one.
We should absolutely be talking about the Red Bulls in this because they're the ones to talk about. But I also want to point out that before the season, we were in this room, and just for giggles, I asked you guys, do you think other teams should tank for a year or two since it seems Toronto are so unbeatable? Since they were so good last year, we thought they were going to be so good this year. I remember sitting here and saying, man, I wonder if, you know, like half the Eastern Conference team should kind of like blow this year, trade players, get all the TAM they can, and wait for Toronto to be bad in 2 years. And
Orlando City and the Chicago Fire listened. Yeah, they just took that advice. Uh-huh. That's the spin room right there.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Look, we're talking about Red Bulls, and there's one thing to talk about here. I mean, look, the game is the game, and I really don't care. It's 3 points for the Red Bulls. Good for them. They keep pace with Atlanta United. But this is about Bradley Wright Phillips. This is about the yellow card that he got that gets him to five, that gets him suspended for the biggest game of the season. The biggest. For dissent. And we talked about it on Instant Replay, so you can go get the take there. We had a tough time with this one. I think everybody should. Now, a lot of people have the same gut reaction I did when I watched the play, which is, man, that's BS.
Yeah.
To miss this guy for the biggest game of the season over some words? Come on now. What's going on here?
You guys are both looking at me like I'm the dissent guy.
Yeah.
You know, like
we've seen your temper.
How many yellow cards do you think you got for dissent in your time as a professional and or amateur high-level soccer player?
Yeah, not that many. I was a dissent guy. Uh-huh. But the thing is, dissents in the professional game aren't really a thing.
Yeah.
You know? You can have your opinion on that, but the point is that, in general, precedent has been set that you've got to really go over a very high threshold to get a yellow card for dissent. And listen, we want to give referees the benefit of the doubt on this. We really don't want players to be abusing referees, but it did not appear that BWP went over that threshold.
Brian Poschall was the AR on this play, and if you didn't see it, here's what happened. BWP is on the sideline. Red Bulls are up 1-0. It's late in the game. He's being held. He wants the call, and he's yelling at Poschall a little bit, and then he runs at him if the call is not made. While play is still live, by the way, and he's still talking to him, Poschall, you see, raises a finger. I interpret that as a warning to BWP. BWP says one more thing. Up comes the flag waves. Here comes the yellow card for dissent. BWP is not happy. Here's what he said after the game. Quote, "It's ridiculous, man. It's too big. We're men. If you can't take a swear word and what really happened, then we're in the wrong sport, man. It's ridiculous. If someone said that to me, I wouldn't even be like, I'd be like, sorry, I missed. It's a yellow card? The guy was having a nightmare all game. A nightmare." Now, BWP did confirm that he used a curse word. Of course, in the rule book, dissent is not, as you might expect, nailed down and defined because it's the laws of the game. And as Bobby and I find out every single week, they're extremely gray, and it just makes us angry. So we won't stick there. He got warned, I think, in this case.
He got warned.
He got warned, but this is where you want a little context. Like, the referees want context, and we should give it to them. But there is some context here that I think referees have to keep in mind as to the stakes, time of season, player involved, level of abuse.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, I'm split. I don't know what
point,
to do.
The point that Kalen Carr made on Saturday night, and I think Bobby was making it too, is like, if you're a guy who's constantly chirping at the refs, it's almost like you get more leeway because they're used to you doing it. And when it's someone like Bradley Wright Phillips, who doesn't have a reputation for doing this, who doesn't accumulate a lot of cards, when he kind of blows his top a little bit, it becomes more jarring. And maybe that makes him more likely to get a yellow card. No matter how you slice it, I think it's crap. I think it's terrible for this game. I think it's terrible for the supporter shield, for the supporter shield race. Every neutral wants to see full strength Atlanta United against full strength Red Bulls, and we're not going to have that. We're going to have Derek Etienne or Brian White, who are, you know, pretty good young players, but neither of them is Bradley Wright Phillips. We're going to have one of those two guys leading the line in the biggest regular season game of the year.
And remember what BWP did against Atlanta earlier this year.
Right?
He put the ball in the back of the net twice. Yeah. This is what BWP does. I mean, I have a tough time with this one because we weren't on the field. We don't know what was said. We don't have Brian Poschall's viewpoint. We don't know if BWP was warned earlier in the match. We don't know if this was an ongoing thing. We don't know what exactly was said other than the fact that Bradley did confirm that it was a curse word. It's just unfortunate. It's really just unfortunate that this is the outcome that has to happen. And you might say, look, he had four other yellow cards that got him to this point. Okay, yellow cards happen during a season. Ultimately, there is one that broke the camel's back, so to speak, and that's this one. And you have to decide, this and all of them, whether they were legitimate.
We have, at the end of the day, we can have this conversation. We have to give the referee the benefit of the doubt because it's what I just want to point out, by the way, is that I can't wait for Brian White to score and Matthew BWP doesn't score in big games. Doyle is on this podcast.
He scores in big regular season games. And to be fair, he scores in big games in the playoffs after the cause has already been lost. Like, remember his goal in last year's U.S. Open Cup final? After it was 2-0 in the 93rd minute, and there's BWP to get his goal. But when it was scoreless in the 16th minute, and he was in on goal, he couldn't put it away. Fine, keep dunking
I'm
on me.
I'm just saying,
Bobby.
I can't wait for your tweet theorizing whether Brian White deserves a start over BWP in the big playoff game.
That's TBD.
That is not going to happen, though. That would be a Simon Bork column for sure.
Oh, yeah. Green light, sure. No doubt about it. Atlanta United, of course, they held serve. They beat RSL. They have the most wins per Bobby Warshaw's math against opponents currently this very second in the MLS playoff field with 8. Red Bulls have 8 as well. No surprise then that both of those are the top of the Shield standings. LAFC 7, Galaxy 7. That makes your eyes pop a little bit. Dallas 6, NYCFC 6, Portland 6, Columbus 5, Philly 5. I'll go all the way down. Sporting Kansas City at the bottom with 3. That's a little bizarre.
Bobby, what was your methodology for this? Was it teams who were over the playoff line at the time they met or teams that are over the playoff line now?
It was right now if the playoffs were to start. It's like Montreal counts, DC United doesn't. So if you're in the top 6.
Okay.
So Atlanta, I think at this point, Atlanta are the best team in the league.
Yeah.
I think they're going to win the Supporters' Shield.
Yeah.
I think they probably deserve it, and they're probably going to get that CCL spot in the process because they've now extended their lead over the Red Bulls, and NYCFC is just – they're gone in that one.
Right.
So cumulative 17-18 total points gets you in if you're an American team. They're going to get in. They're good to go. Can we talk about Julian Gressel? I mean, we've talked about the rest of this team ad nauseum all year long. Julian Gressel has 13 assists. Julian Gressel makes half-volley, chest-down goals look like child's play. Julian Gressel – is a best 11 player in this league.
Yep.
Julian Gressel may either be sold or they may sign him. But Julian Gressel got passed on by 6 teams in the 2017 Super Draft. 6 teams!
I mean, it happens every year with somebody, right? And it was Christian Roldan was a big one. I mean, that same offseason, they just banned Chivas. And nobody wanted Marky Delgado. You know, so like every year there's somebody that teams miss. And the question is, are teams missing these players? Or is it good coaches, good clubs, good franchises see the talent in these players and give them a chance to see it to succeed and coach them up? I think it's more of the like. I think if you put Julian Gressel on San Jose, he would be the 25th man, and Michael Starr never would have had any idea what to do with him. But because you know he's had the chance to play for one of the best coaches I think this league has ever seen for the past 2 years. He's been put in great positions. His skill set has been maximized all over the field, and give the kid a ton of credit as well. He has taken every advantage of that. But I think this is, Houston Dynamo drafted someone called Joe Holland, I think, instead of Julian Gressel. Like, okay.
One pick before Jake Nowinski went to Vancouver.
Yeah, and Nowinski's been pretty
good.
He's
good, yeah.
But,
yeah,
like, I just don't.
UConn, you got that UConn.
I just don't think that Gressel would have had the same level of success elsewhere because it's about the system and the process and having the platform to get the best out of youngish players.
It's nice to be able to cross to the guys he crosses to as well, but his service is impeccable. So
yeah.
I don't think it's like chicken and egg. Like, Jose Martinez is also lucky that he's got Julian and Gressel out there whipping in balls to him. What happens with Gressel? Because we've talked all year about Almirón, Martinez, now with Tata, with that October 1st deadline coming up. We haven't really talked about Julian Gressel and what his future looks like. And Paul Tenorio had a really good article that makes you think that you should go check out at The Athletic. I can't recommend The Athletic enough for their coverage of Major League Soccer. And it was basically talking about second and third contracts for young players through the Super Draft, domestic players, how MLS can hold on to those guys. Because right now, it's a little bit of a will they, won't they pay them sort of mentality with some of these guys. Julian Gressel, by all intents and purposes, statistically, eye test, team success, plaudits, rookie of the year, deserves to get paid. Will it be here? Will it be elsewhere? Because Atlanta United could probably sell this dude.
He said to Tenorio, like, he wants to go to Germany. He wants to play in the Bundesliga. I think he's good enough. Maybe it happens after this year. Maybe it happens after next year. Atlanta United have to figure out, because as you said, they're in the Champions League next year. They have to figure out if they want to try to keep this core together. That includes Gressel, Almirón, Martinez. Make a run at the CCL title in the springtime, and then maybe sell all these guys next summer instead and do a mid-season rebuild. But we're talking a lower-end Bundesliga team, maybe a higher-end Bundesliga 2 team. I think he's absolutely good enough to go out on the field, and if they get the right offer, it's a business. You have to listen.
I think you're overvaluing. I'm not sure he's undoubtedly a Bundesliga player or even a high Bundesliga. I mean, remember Chad Marshall was MLS player of the Defender of the Year a few years ago and had to go on trial at Bundesliga 2, right? Making the jump from MLS to Bundesliga is really, really hard. But Gressel is very good. I'm okay with what Doyle said, trying to hold on to them for Champions League. What I do wonder about this team is, as great as Atlanta has been and as much credit as we have given them, remember the Oakland A's and Moneyball? Remember, like, the dirty little secret to the Moneyball theory?
No, remind us.
That they had three star pitchers at the time, right? That
yeah,
they
yeah.
overachieved
Zito,
with
Mulders,
and Hudson.
Hudson, yeah.
Right? So, like, any other theory you have to say about them, they happened to hit a bubble with those three guys. And everything else was irrelevant, perhaps, except that they just overhit with three key players. And I do wonder, for as wonderful as Atlanta, is there any way they could replicate Almiron, Martinez, and maybe more than anyone, Gressel?
Yeah, there's a point
Doyle's
to that.
Looking at me like I'm crazy on this.
There's a point to that, but they have the opportunity to do so. And I think what you look at Atlanta and say, like LAFC sort of this year, sometimes you create your own luck. You know, Omar Gobert turned into a boatload of allocation cash for them on little investment on the front end. Julian Gressel looks like, if they sell him, that he will be that same sort of thing. Like, oh yeah, we got this guy for a super draft pick. We developed him into this. We got two, three, whatever it is, great years. And now we have more funds to go back and reinvest and to sign guys and to create the bubble ourselves. Because remember, they also had to scout those guys, choose those guys, recruit those guys, and pay for those guys. So yeah, there's a bubble there. But you could argue that Atlanta created that bubble. Why wouldn't they be able to do it again? Jeremy Darnell via email here. Before walking into Mercedes-Benz Stadium yesterday, he said he was telling his friends his only real concern was Chris McCann being matched up against Jefferson Savarino of RSL. He said he was pleasantly surprised to see Tata select George Bello at left back and was absolutely floored by his performance. He had Savarino in his pocket for large stretches of the game. As a fan of the Five Stripes, I'm stoked for his future and with the national team. He's a legit left-back prospect. What did you guys see? He wants your take on George Bello.
It was
Bello.
Left wing back, right, because it was a 3-4-3. Bello, 16 years old, arguably the best fullback prospect in the U.S. pipeline. You know, rumors that Manchester City are watching him, among others, like Pep Guardiola in particular has interest in him. He's really good. He had a really good first 45 minutes. Struggled a little bit when Brooks Lennon was overlapping. He wasn't able to keep Lennon in front of him. He did better against Savarino. On the second, you know, in the second half, he wasn't as good. He pretty clearly ran out of gas early in the second half, and he was targeted a little bit. But he's 16 years old, playing a super physical position against two really good players in Brooks Lennon and Jefferson Savarino. It was a very promising first start from him.
I think we always – you're right. Fantastic first start. I think we always overvalue first starts, second starts, third starts. You know, he's 16.
I mean, he was better than Chris McCann's been. You know, our friend there is correct. He should have been very worried about Chris McCann going up against those two guys. I thought Bello did much better defensively than we would have seen from McCann.
But the point of these teenagers is that they're inconsistent, right? They have days in training when they're the best
Bobby,
player.
Bobby, that's the point of every player. That's the point of every – No, it's not,
but they're more inconsistent.
That's the point of every – like, we see this from guys who are young, from guys who are old, from guys who are in their prime. And what makes Atlanta United special is that their very best players, Joseph and Almiron, and you could say Remedy now, and Gonzalez Perez, they're all consistent. That's what has elevated them.
Right, but you didn't list any teenagers there.
No, that's fine. George, they're teenagers. I mean, other than Barco, they're not playing.
Yeah, which
but
one?
Who's been more consistent than Tyler Adams this year? Nobody.
Right,
who's been more consistent than Alphonso Davies this year?
For
nobody.
Sure, but you just listed like the two best teenagers in the history of either Canadian or American soccer.
That's
right.
That's
outside
that's
of
Pulisic. That's a
or outside
a
in MLS.
That's a hot.
Then MLS. Then name a better teenager in MLS history. Than Davies.
Landon
or
Donovan.
Yeah, I was going to
okay,
say.
Okay, so that's fair. All right, you just named the best player
DeMarcus
in Mensa.
DeMarcus Beasley, I'd throw
okay,
out there
no,
well.
For sure. And if we got Tyler Adams to be like either of those players, for sure. The point is the best of the best are fairly consistent teenagers.
Yeah, but it doesn't come,
the
down,
other
99% it doesn't come down
to
whether or not they're teenagers.
Yes, it
comes
does.
Down to whether or not they're wired to be consistent. Now, there's a learning curve, but certain athletes have a better upstairs than other guys do, whatever their age is.
I don't remember what Landon and DeMarcus were like as teenagers, but I'd be willing to bet they had their most inconsistent years when they were 17 through 19.
All right, let's talk about inconsistency, and that is the LA Galaxy defined. 3-0 winners against the Seattle Sounders. It's two straight losses for the Sounders. We will get to them in 1 second. Is it too little too late for LA? Maybe, maybe not. They're only 4 points back. I think they have one game more played than the Seattle Sounders. The Sounders have lost two straight. They got a shutout.
Did we bury them,
and we shouldn't have?
Honestly,
or?
I don't think it's Seattle that they're really chasing, because Seattle's schedule from here on out is pretty easy. They have Colorado and Houston at home the next 2 weeks. They finish the season with San Jose at home. In between, they're at Orlando and at Houston. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they took 12 or more points out of those five games. So I think Seattle's going to be okay. It comes down to RSL and Portland, who, you know, they RSL's on 45 points. Portland's on 47. They have a home and home against each other. Whichever team does worse in that home and home is going to leave the door open for LA if LA can take what they did against Seattle and bottle it for the next few weeks, which is a huge if.
Or maybe Vancouver, who lost at home as well. We talk about Portland. Giovanni Savarese dropped an F-bomb in his halftime interview to describe his team's play in Minnesota. They, of course, would lose 3-2. Vancouver, set pieces, set pieces, set pieces. They got beat by set pieces. FC Dallas go on the road and get that job done. Meanwhile, Zlatan's out here talking about Malmo and whether or not he's going to be with the Galaxy long term. If you're a betting man, Zlatan in L.A. in 2019, yes or no?
Yes, but I think there's going to be a lot of other changes in that team. And I don't think he's going to be a TAM player.
That would be a safe bet, I would guess. By the way, Jurgen Klinsmann watched this game.
Yeah.
Right next to Chris Klein, which got a lot of people either, one, panicking, two, extremely excited, three, with a little schadenfreude for the LA Galaxy, hoping that they sign Jurgen as a head coach and or general manager. Both. Make him both. He's got a good track record with that.
It's too good to be true. Too good to be. Jeff Carlisle reported that he's not in talks to be the head coach, but even still, just the general visual for Chris Klein, he should have known better than to be with Klinsmann in that situation.
Remember, Ziggy was, you know, seen at a Galaxy Open Cup game in the week or two before Kurt Anolfo was fired and Ziggy was hired, and everybody was like, oh, it's no big deal. He lives in L.A. He's there all the time.
Team narrative was definitely here for Jurgen Klinsmann.
Oh, my God.
Imagine
Klinsmann versus Bob Bradley in L.A. in El Tráfico. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's pretty rich.
Hook that to my veins.
It's pretty rich. Sounders, should they be concerned? They didn't really look like they had much in this game. And they lost at home to the Union. Brian Schmetzer said that they were going to work on something at halftime. It didn't look like much got changed or worked on.
Here's the thing about the Sounders right now. Their fans should not be that stressed about that game. Yes, the Galaxy won easily, but that game was largely the same game that they've played for the last 12, and they just lost the moments, right? They didn't get a call, or they didn't have somebody make a great play, or they didn't get the balance, or the bounce, and it went the other way, right? The Galaxy got the close call.
That's
the Galaxy got the bounce.
Hugely overstated.
No, it was largely the same.
But that said, like, I don't think they should be concerned.
No, it was the same performance for the most part that they put in for the last 2 months. Those performances put you. The point of their performance is that they put them in the middle, and they have a chance to win every game, and they won 9 straight. And this one, it went the other way, and they didn't. It's the same thing. They'll go to the playoffs and they'll have a chance to win every single game. They had a chance to win this game, right? They didn't get outplayed by the Galaxy. They didn't get run off the field. The Galaxy got 3 goals and the Sounders didn't. Sometimes that's what happens in soccer.
Bruin and Rui Diaz up top. Is that a good thing? Do we like that?
Are we just going to let Doyle mumble under his breath without giving his...
You're right here. You're a man.
How would you...
Like BWP says, handle your own business.
Did you interpret it differently?
I mean, I thought that they, you know, I went back and I watched the game this morning. They weren't sharp. Like, they weren't as committed, I think, through midfield. And they didn't have as much of the ball in good spots as they have had during this run. And obviously playing without Chad Marshall was a huge loss for this team. I think it's a stretch to say it's the same way that they've played for the last 12 games. And look, they had a long unbeaten streak. They had a record winning streak, and they lost a game on Wednesday that they should have won, and I think there's a natural sort of emotional bottom drops out a little bit. And we've seen that with other teams that go on long unbeaten runs, including their next-door neighbors, including Portland. So this week didn't surprise me at all, but again, their schedule from here on out is so soft. They only need 7 more points to guarantee themselves a shot at the playoffs, and I'll be shocked if they don't get that.
Remaining schedule, that's what it's all about. Timbers lose in Minnesota. They're far off their streak of old. Giovanni Savarese, if you didn't see that halftime interview, go check it out. By the way, Darwin Quintero continues to be a must-watch player in this league. I cannot
at home
wait.
Anyway.
Yes, there you go. Well, that's what I was going to say. Can't wait to see him at Allianz Arena. It's going to be beautiful. Or stadium, whatever that second word there is. Point is, it's Allianz. It's almost built. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it does.
It's St. Paul's going to have itself a gym there. Vancouver at home, set pieces. They don't mark at the near post.
It's a shame because Vancouver was a fun team to watch for good chunks of this year, especially when they have those four guys, Reyna, Kamara, Davies, and Teixeira playing together. This is the first game they've lost all season when they've had those four guys together. I think this is the first game that they've scored fewer than two goals when they've had all this. And, like, credit to Matt Hedges, and who was outstanding in the Dallas defense. You know, Reggie Cannon in particular, like, putting him on an island at right back to deal with Davies and Teixeira both. It was a really good battle that they had. And Dallas just had that little bit of extra quality, that little bit of know-how. This is a nail in the coffin for Vancouver because they're going into the wood chipper. They're at L.A., at Toronto, versus Sporting, at LAFC, versus Portland to end the season. I just don't see a way back for them.
Did they waste the Davies year of brilliance?
Well, I mean, they got paid, so I don't think they wasted it entirely.
That's a great point. You know, I'm going to just strike that from the record. The word waste is probably...
By the way, I do think they would be up a few more places in the standings if they had played Russell Tybert all season. He was excellent in this game. It was a losing cause, but he was excellent.
Is Davies going to be best 11?
That's a good question.
I mean,
Probably not.
Yeah, if you probably look at it, the wingers, it's probably Piatti and Vela. Mm-hmm. Right, there's a few other guys in the
play. Almirón in the middle,
well.
Joseph up top. I mean, that's ultimately he plays probably the most impressive high profile position in the league right now. There are just so many good players in that spot, and he's been brilliant. He's been incredible. But to jump those guys, I think it was probably a bridge too far, and for them not to make the playoffs again, team performance goes into
Piatti's
this as
well. Piatti's got 13-13 this year,
so quietly too.
He's ridiculous.
Extremely quietly. The team that won biggest this weekend in the playoff race didn't even play a game. DC United hanging out, waiting, resting, preparing for that Montreal match next Saturday, which is maybe the biggest match in the Eastern Conference, not including the Supporters' Shield clash between Atlanta and the Red Bulls. They needed Montreal and New England both to drop points at home. Montreal 1-1 against NYCFC, 2-0, except Montreal scored an own goal, so 1-1. New England had an own goal too. Michael Mancien, 2-2 against the Chicago Fire. And also, did you see that defending on the Alexander Katai goal?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
come on, guys.
That was summertime New England. I mean, the Revs are still technically unbeaten in four. They have one win and three draws. But the previous three games, they had been a lot better defensively just by not stepping on a rake. And they went out against the Fire, and they just found a couple of rakes to step right on. I mean, Chicago had 25% possession. They were generating nothing at all, and the Revs gave them two.
Montreal? They had kind of become a darling. Quincy Amerikwa out in the media doing his thing. This was a game against NYCFC, Bobby, that you are not high on anymore. That they should have won this game. They should have found a way to win this game. If they want to be in the playoff field, if they don't want to have DC breathing down their neck, by the way, DC now have the ability to pass them with those games in hand. Before this game, DC did not have that ability. Now, 35 points for DC, 40 for Montreal, two games in hand for DC. One of those games in hand is against Montreal. They can pass them just with games in hand, let alone the remainder of that schedule.
The game worked out exactly the way Montreal would have liked it to be. NYCFC tried to keep the ball. They did keep the ball. They didn't get good opportunities. Montreal got the ball. Montreal won the ball, hit them on the break, and did get good opportunities. They just didn't score them. I mean, Montreal has to kick themselves. But they still look better and better, right? They deserve to beat Red Bulls. They deserve to beat Philly. They probably deserve to beat NYC. So for most of the year, they were getting points and saying in the playoff race, and we were saying they weren't good or didn't look good. And now all of a sudden, they're doing small things really well to deserve the points, and this is the first time in a couple weeks they haven't gotten them.
Michael Azira scored his first career MLS goal.
I mean, it's one of those goals where, you know, if you're a young midfielder, you make that entry pass into a creative attacking player like Piatti, and you follow the ball in because something magical might happen like that particular – like, just beat your man to the spot and crash the box.
That pass, and then Pipa Higuain's little flick pass inside – to Jesse Zardes, Cressy, 2-1 winners against Colorado. Those are the two passes of the weekend for me. By far. I love Pipa's. I prefer that one, but Piatti's is sick as well.
Just real quick on Michael Azira. Going from this year at Montreal, now that they are doing really well with him in there, and to Colorado, if you're to build a certain kind of team, he might be one of the first guys you pick up on his budget constraint, on what he offers that type of style.
No, he's been a really good acquisition for them because he's a no-frills player. He eats up ground defensively, and by playing such a let's say compact, by playing in a bunker, like you limit the impact of his limitations as a distributor. You take the ball off his foot in crucial moments, and you just make the game simple. And if you do that, I mean, it's a really great fit. It's not a surprise that Michael Azira, who was so key for that 2016 Columbus or Colorado team that just bunkered for 40 straight games and was really good at it, is then good on this Montreal team that's doing the same thing.
That's just my role on this show, guys. Sonny, Michael Azira, Diego Chara. I just try and get the love into the Sixes, into the show.
I like how you mix all those guys together into one big brew, which is brew here.
What do you think about Diego Chara not really playing as a six?
No, we're not going there. You guys have yelled enough at each other already this episode. Sporting Kansas City, should they be worried? We'll cover Philly, by the way, in the second segment. Complete U.S. Open Cup preview for you there. It's also on video if you want to go watch it all around the interwebs, MLS channels. Should KC be worried? They played their first team in Philly, I know, in Philly. And Philly played kind of a B team, but they didn't generate a ton.
Yeah, I don't think they should be worried exactly. This might actually help them in the long run because Peter Vermees is going to break them this week. He is going to use this as a cudgel against these guys who were maybe a little too comfortable after winning 5-1 at San Jose last week. And you know, to be fair, this is the end of a stretch in which they had 3 of 4 on the road. So you know, it's maybe not the easiest stretch in the world, but if you look at the way this lines up for them for the rest of the season, they have first place. Like, it's there for them if they play like they did at the start of September and the end of August.
FC Dallas, LAFC, those are the teams in the West that are competing there. Dallas on top, 53 points. Sporting KC on 51, LAFC on 50. All have played 29 games. LAFC got a win against the Quakes. Walker Zimmerman has got impeccable timing. Jerry Maguire would be proud of the way this all went down. Sam Stachel reported before this game that Zimmerman had said no to a contract extension from LAFC. Remember, he is out of a deal at the end of this season. He apparently is entertaining offers from overseas, perhaps the Bundesliga, to go back to Bobby's point earlier about that transition that he could make. But either way, he's playing for money. He's playing for cashola. He's trying to get that raise, get the bag. And then he scores 2 goals with his head, his first goals in more than a year. Good timing, man. Well done. Good stuff. Yeah.
Totally. I was going to make a comment about the Bundesliga, but I didn't know if I felt confident enough in it. That Walker Zimmerman, to me, makes way more sense to Bundesliga than Julian Gressel.
But sometimes you get to explain that now.
Just center back is much easier to make the transition from level to level like that than to try to do it at right mid or center mid. Or maybe Gressel could do it right back. You think Bundesliga, he would be right back in
It'd
Bundesliga?
Be a right back or a right wing back, yeah.
Yeah. See, that makes a little more sense than him trying to slide up into like a wing or a midfield position, but... Yeah, go Walker Zimmerman, get paid. Yep.
It was like this was a little bit interesting from Bob Bradley because we've seen LAFC primarily playing in a 4-3-3, where they have three pretty interchangeable parts in central midfield. And in this one, it was much more of a 4-2-3-1 with Carlos Vela playing underneath Adama Diamande. And Vela is not interchangeable with Lee Wynn or Atuesta, who's very good, by the way, and has given them a little bit of steel in central midfield. Bob Bradley is experimenting to see if he could figure out how to build chemistry between Diamande and Vela, who are his two best finishers and I think probably his two best attackers. And so far, though, Diamande has played better without Vela, and Vela has played better without Diamande. So it's almost October. It's still very much a work in progress for LAFC.
San Jose, clearly. A work in progress as well. On Walker Zimmerman, that Paul Tenorio article, we will talk about that later on this week, I think. And also Sam Stachel's reporting about that third DP spot in Major League Soccer and whether or not it could go away and be a limit in spending and TAM. And I don't like that idea, but we'll spend some actual time digging into that with Sam a little bit later. I just want you to know that's coming. Before we get to U.S. Open Cup preview, Sam did report that the Earthquakes have been in touch with Stanford head coach Jeremy Gunn about their head coaching position, 3 straight NCAA titles there. And then Jeff Carlisle, as he does, added to that reporting. Mark Dos Santos, currently an LAFC assistant, is on that list as well. Caleb Porter, they asked about Guillermo Barros-Schelotto's asking price on wages. That would be, I GBS'd MLS is like my dream. I want that. I'm not sure it's going to happen in San Jose. And then Peter Bosch, former Dortmund manager, also in that category as well. Bobby, you and I have talked about it. I'll give you like a minute or two here. What do you think San Jose needs? What should they be looking for?
Well, I would love to know what GBS said his number would be. For you guys, $10 million. Them, you know, a little less. I spent a lot of time thinking about this question, Andrew. I think in 2018, to be a good manager, The number one thing you have to have, I'll say break into two things. One is, I do think you need a commitment to a philosophy. I think this idea of being able to mold to different things might be possible, but only in year three or four. I think when you get somewhere, to use the Jesse Marsh phrase, you need to brainwash everyone into fully committing into what you have. I think the second part of that is you need to be incredibly detail-oriented. To be a good manager nowadays, you need to understand that every little tiny detail on the field matters. Gone are the days when it's a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3 and you let players on the field figure it out and hope the pairings and the matchups work. You need to really give players something to do at every moment. And when you walk, and when a coach comes into an interview and doesn't check those two boxes, we can talk about styles, we can talk about knowing the league, and those probably do matter. But to be a decent head coach in 2018, if your manager, if the person in your interview doesn't show those two things, I think you have to rule them out.
What of these guys sticks out to you? Like, let's just say this is the group right now. If you're Jesse Fiorinelli and you're running through these, who sticks out to you?
I mean, if Scalotta's really in the group, Scalotta sticks out.
Yeah, well, that's the obvious one. But I think we all kind of beat around the bush there in the sense that we don't really think that's
if he's
all
coming,
that
yeah,
realistic.
Yeah, if Scalotta's coming to MLS, it's either to Atlanta to replace Tata or maybe the Galaxy. Like, maybe the Galaxy can throw enough at him to pry him away. But even that's a big if. I don't know if any of them stick out more than the others. You know, some of them, I mean, Caleb Porter's had some success in this league, but he's also had some pretty, you know, bad years with good teams. Jeremy Gunn has done really well over the, I mean, he's the most successful college coach since Bruce Arena. That's significant.
And maybe this is his entry point.
It's probably his only entry point. Right. I don't think you're going to see a lot of college coaches going from college to MLS in the future. Just, it seems like the league has maybe moved past that in a couple of ways. So if it's going to happen for him, it probably has to happen here. His teams play the ugliest soccer in the freaking world. It's effective, but it's the ugliest soccer in the freaking world, and I don't know if it could work at the professional level the way it has worked at the college level.
Let me add a note on the way Gunn plays, coaches that Stanford team. You spend 5 minutes with Jeremy, and you will be impressed. And Jeremy can do every game tree logical chain there is to make in soccer to figure out what wins. I don't think he's necessarily attached to that style. He just knows college soccer. His job is to win games, and he plays the way to win games. If he were to have a new set of players, new rules, new everything.
So if you gave him Atlanta United, you think you would see a 4-2-3-1 high press that molds to a 3-5-2 counterattacking team and like all stops in between?
Yes. I don't think he'd be as good as Tata at it. Like, right. I do think that his skill set and his demeanor speaks more to a lower budget team who does have to play within certain constraints, meaning they have to play a certain way, which, ding, 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 is probably the San Jose Earthquakes.
All right, Earthquakes fans, let us know. 401-206-0MLS. Anything you got on MLS Week 30 or 31 or the Open Cup, we want it in the mailbag. We got a great one coming up for you. But first, U.S. Open Cup preview. That's on the other side.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Time Radio, driven by Continental, doing something a little bit different. We're in studio hanging out, abandoned the green room, just for this one special show, guys. U.S. Open Cup preview, Wednesday, trophy, hardware. Who's going to get it? Union, Dynamo, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Univision Deportes, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. We've got the pregame show for you on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. If you don't already subscribe, do it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to have you every single week. And a little program information, just so Bobby Warshaw remains a little bit jealous of our trip to Houston, we are going to go to Pitch 25 on Tuesday night. Play pickup, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Come for drinks before. That's Brian Ching's bar. I've got my ankle braces and my turfs ready to go. Two Ankle Brace FC, Andrew Wiebe in the business. All right, let's get to it. Neither of these two teams have won Open Cup before. First-time winners coming up for you. We'll start with the Union side, Bobby, and I'll let you have the honors right now. What have they built? The Union product.
Give me the Kool-Aid. Give me the hard sell here.
Well, I'll leave the what they've built to Doyle. I think Doyle's a little more excited about the youth movement and
Absolutely.
Playing the homegrown kids and the academy kids. I think that was a little bit more out of necessity in their roster this year than actually long-term planning. But I just think the product on the field has been fantastic because I speak every week on this show that I truly believe there are more efficient ways to play this game of soccer, and the Union do them. Right? Starting with their usage of the ball. If you trust each other and you put your faith in this idea of possession and breaking that down into playing simple passes, playing quick passes, keeping the ball moving, you can make the sum larger than the addition of the parts.
Yeah.
Right? You can get the most at a group of players, and that's what the Union have shown this year, right? Nobody looks at that roster and says, those 11 guys are probably a top six team in the East. Well, nobody except this guy. But in the way they play, in the way they've set up their team, they get the most out of everyone, and that's what has me excited, because it's this real life theoretical example of what soccer teams can and should be.
Bobby's right. It burns me to say it. We were actually having the conversation this weekend. Like, other than Atlanta United, has there been a more fun team to watch this year than Philly? I don't think so. And I think it's because of what they do with the ball. And it's, you know, I think you're overstating maybe the lack of talent a little bit, because they do have guys like Harris Madunian and
Don't try
Alejandro
and turn around. You do not
Bedoya.
Have them in the playoffs in the end of the season.
Well, they didn't have a playmaker at the start of the season, and they didn't have Corey Burke, and we didn't know how good the back line would be. You know, so like they ended up, look, they have a lot of talent in that midfield, and they trust each other, as Bobby said, to move the ball well. But these aren't just simple passes. If you watch the way this team plays, they hit a ton of third-line passes. These are passes that split defenders and you know, eliminate defenders from the play.
I think this is really important, because this is a crucial part when we talk about passing soccer, right? There's third-line passes and passes that break the lines that are forced and tough to make. There's ones that come naturally.
Yeah.
The Unions come naturally because they make every other pass simple. Yeah. And when you make simple passes and you just move the ball, it turns off your brain. When we get into a good conversation and we're firing back and forth, the show ends and we're like, where'd that hour go?
Yeah.
We don't remember, and that's when we do our best shows. If you just keep the ball moving, it makes these harder, more impressive passes come simpler and easier.
And I think that comes from their structure. Right? It comes from because they've drilled it and everybody understands their role. Like, the true creativity can only come from having, like, really well-defined roles.
So what you're saying right now, because he's already jumped in and basically compared us and himself to the Union, I'm Jim Curtin. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm Jim Curtin.
I just want to say the best part
about
having the cameras here.
You're not as nice as Jim Curtin.
The best part about having the cameras here is that when Weeby tells us to shut up on the podcast, he's like, you guys are dorks, stop, and he does his hand signals.
Right.
Now everyone can see. Now everyone sees.
I don't know if I love that.
You're being a little bit restrained, to be honest with you.
Balance of youth and quality.
Yeah.
To kind of go between the two and bridge the two. And you said it. We didn't know Austin Trusty was going to be Austin Trusty. We didn't know Mark McKenzie was going to be a good running mate. We didn't know Keegan Rosenberry was going to be back up to rookie year Keegan Rosenberry form, or at least close to it. They've trusted the Bedoyas of the world, the Madunians of the world. They went and got Doge called. Corey Burke came out of nowhere. It didn't work out with CJ Sapong. David Akam.
See, I'm going to say he didn't come out of nowhere. He came out of the Union system. He came out of their commitment to developing players. And sometimes, hopefully, it's going to be the Austin Trusties, Mark McKenzie's, Derek Joneses of the world, guys who are youth national team stars, starters anyway.
Burke was out for Jamaica.
And sometimes it's going to be guys who are in their mid-20s who haven't found the right spot yet. And they had him at Bethlehem Steel for 2 years. And they coached him into being a real soccer player. And when he got onto the field for the Union, he was ready to contribute. He took his chance. It's the same thing that the Red Bulls did with Aaron Long. Like, they made Aaron Long. And, like, granted, the kid has a lot to do with that himself. But, like, it's not an accident. If you're committed to developing these players, you will get players.
But you know the thing to point out is that Corey Burke was not a high-line USL player, right? He is not someone that was on the USL team and said, we have to push through the system. Austin Trusty, Mark McKenzie were not elite academy players. They weren't guys that were no-brainers, right? The Union took the leap of faith. The Union said, these guys are good enough, and we believe if we build the right system and we coach them up, we can get the most out of them. These were not guys that any team in the league would have played.
Yeah. Raw materials in terms of just what they bring to the table, but then all of them have, obviously, the mental I mean, Trusty is having Matt Miazga's 2015 season just about in terms of, as a 20-year-old, stepping into the back line and becoming an indispensable player.
So what would this trophy, because this is what it's all about, ultimately, is like, yeah, you develop these players, you get Corey Burke out of USL, you want to make the playoffs, but ultimately for a team like Philly that's never done it, never won a trophy, never hoisted silverware, this is the moment. And they've been there twice before, and they lost both of those times at home in heartbreaking fashion to Sporting Kansas City and the Seattle Sounders. So you've had a turnover in the front office. Ernie Stewart is gone. He's with the national team. Ernst Tanner is in from Red Bull Salzburg and Hoffenheim. They're building YSC, the academy. They're finding a way to build a culture at the first team level. And now they have an opportunity to cement that culture. What would this trophy mean? For a club that's made the playoffs twice in 8 seasons, what would this mean to what they're building, who they are now, Bobby, but who they want to be in the future? How does this change things?
I want Matt to take this first because he believes it.
It validates the project.
Yeah.
If you get a trophy, and now granted, it's not MLS Cup, which is, I think, if you polled every team, that would be the one they want. But this is still a major trophy. It's been around 100 years. It gets you to the Champions League. It's something you bring to your fans and you show them and you say, this is working. We could beat anybody on our day. And look, we just did it. It validates the project.
I think it validates the style of playing soccer. That if you build trust and courage within your players to play a certain brand, that you don't need players over a certain threshold or over a certain price point, that just by having those two emotional values within your team, you can get them to play a certain way that is fun and also can get results.
Three, like, if you look at their back line and goalkeeper, three of the guys are from the draft, Andre Blake, Jack Elliott, Raymond Gattis. Two of the guys are essentially from the academy, and Keegan Rosemary is a Union Academy
drafted
kid.
Though.
Yeah, he was drafted, but like he's a Union Academy kid, and Trusty are going to start. Like, that's the project, but as you said, marrying it to the style of play, integrating them with guys who have played in some of the biggest leagues in Europe, in Deutsche Kolle and Padoya and Medunian, and getting guys like, I mean, CJ Sapong was a striker to start the year, but he's adapted to a new role as a target winger. Seeing all of that click, like, that's what MLS has to be if it's going to get to be one of the 5 or 6 best leagues in the world. We have to be able to build this from within and make it blend with guys who have been at the highest level.
But you also mentioned it. The number 10 was a little bit missing.
Yeah.
A lot of bit missing. And they went out and got Borg Deutsch calling. Got to be honest, we panned the dude for probably a good month when
snarky
he arrived.
Snarky Twitter heroes.
Yeah. As they say, snarky Twitter heroes. That was the three of us. And Jim Curtin noticed it. And now he's praising Bobby Warshaw in press conferences, so we see how his fate
has changed. I don't like that.
But he says Bedoya should be in the best 11 conversation.
Deutsch call.
But he said Bedoya last night. Now he says Deutsch call should probably be in the MVP conversation as well. I didn't have him in there. I think he's got 15 assists.
Yeah,
this season.
Leads the league.
Five goals.
He's like a nice rug. He ties the whole thing together. He makes the game easier for the guys around him. Which is beyond the assists, beyond anything else, he makes the game easier for the guys around him. And if you're making 10 other guys 5% better, that is a huge return on investment. Mm-hmm.
One of the things we spent a ton of time is trying to marry our views on number 10s, particularly around the national team. You think he should be a creative playmaker. I don't. I think that slows the team down. But I think Deutsch Call is where we meet, right? Deutsch Call gets assists, but they're not like Pablo Aimar assists. They're not even like Scolotto or Ladero assists where he's playing these beautiful through balls or playing 1-2s. I don't even know how he gets his assists, but his major function, but that's why I don't remember them, right? His major function on this team is making sense of the chaos, of slowing the game down, of trying to calm everyone and make everyone else more comfortable on the ball. And to me, Deutsch Call has been great, but that's all something that we can replicate here in the United States with our players. We can find a player like that. He might not be the incredible playmaker of other guys, but he can bring the sense to the game like a Deutsch Call.
And they got a couple of kids in the academy.
Jim Curtin used to be in that academy. He's been the head coach for a while now. There were some rumblings that he might not last. Ernst Tanner comes in. He's been doing it at a high level in Europe on the academy side, development side for a long time. Hoffenheim, of course, and then Red Bull Salzburg. What does he do with Jim Curtin? At this point, where they are in the playoff standings, if they win this, just the fact that they got there, by the way, Jim Curtin's got to be the guy going forward, no? I mean,
on merit, Jim Curtin should absolutely have this job, right? For what he's done, I know Philly fans want them to be playoffs more often, but what Jim Curtin's done with that roster, with like the constant change around the organization, deserves to be. But I would never blame a sporting director for wanting their own guy. So I would like to see Jim Curtin keep the job, but I would never blame someone for bringing in their own crew.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Bobby. I will be kind of furious with Philly if they let Jim Curtin go because, you know, and remember, he wasn't Ernie Stewart's guy. Ernie Stewart came in after Jim Curtin, and Curtin essentially had to interview for the job again, and he kept the job. And to me, it's been worth it because, again, they play good, attractive soccer. They play the kids. The way they play and the way, frankly, they win this year validates the whole project. And if the worst happens and they let Jim Curtin go, you got to expect there are probably 4 or 5 other teams in MLS this offseason who are going to have job openings. And I would for sure say that he would have to be one of the first calls anybody would make.
8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Univision Deportes. U.S. Open Cup Final. Tune in for the broadcast. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, comes at you immediately after the trophy lift. So you'll watch that on ESPN3 or ESPN+. You'll come right to us on Twitter, Facebook, any MLS channel out there. We will be on that. It's going to be a blast. 10:30 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday night. The big game, the big pickup game. We're going to be at Pitch 25, Brian Ching's joint. And like I said, I got my ankle braces. So I am ready for action. Small side. I got like two games in these lungs. We'll see how that goes. Dynamo at home. That's usually a good recipe for Houston. Although Philly do have a pretty good road record, 6-7-2 in the league this year. But this has not been.
Philly are 5-1-1 in their last seven on the road.
Okay, there you go. That's a good stat. Yeah. This has not been the Orange Crush's year.
No.
Last year, fourth in the Western Conference, almost got the MLS Cup. Those young players went rolling. Albert Luis became a force of nature. The Panterita, the celebration was this thing that everybody around the league knew. This year, they have they've come back down to earth, let's say. They are 10th in the Western Conference, just 8 wins. They really hit a slide. They're 12 points back of Seattle. It's not going to happen. This is it, man. At home, in front of your home fans, U.S. Open Cup up for grabs. You haven't won anything since 2007, yeah. I think it was. You had a couple runner-up finishes in the Supporters' Shield and an MLS Cup over that time. Damn the LA Galaxy. But this is it. This is their season. This Open Cup is everything right now.
Yeah, it is. And, look, Houston made a gamble at the start of the season. Wilmer Cabrera, in particular, made a gamble at the start of the season that it would be worth it in the long run to take some lumps while trying to evolve out of this sit-and-counter identity that they had last year. They got to the playoffs last season by absorbing pressure and then countering through Elise and Minotas and Kyoto and Vicente Sanchez last year as
Kubo
well.
Kubo Torres, by the way. That was early in the season.
They came into this season and with the idea that they had to add more in order to be an elite team, and they spent the better part of the season trying to add more, trying to do a lot of stuff that the Union have done. I think I appreciate the fact that they tried to play prettier soccer, better soccer. The reason it worked out for Philly and it didn't work out for Houston is because Philly could go into their academy and get defenders like Austin Trusty and Mark McKenzie. And when things started going bad, the back line for Houston, they had nobody. They had nobody from that academy who could come in there and soak up and give good minutes. When Juan David Cabezas got hurt, they did not have a backup defensive midfielder. When Harris Madunian is out, the Philadelphia Union have Derek Jones. So it is, they tried to do the same thing that the Union have done. They didn't have the infrastructure for it. And infrastructure is luck. You're buying yourself more dice rolls. You're buying yourself more hands at the tables because if Sapong doesn't work out and Simpson doesn't work out, hey, it's Corey Burke. With the Union, or with the Dynamo rather, they just did not have that.
I want to establish one thing. Dynamo do have the lowest payroll in Major League Soccer. They have the lowest payroll. So it's not just payroll, though. They do have the Toros down Rio Grande Valley. It's not connected the way Bethlehem Steel is for the Union. It doesn't have as many success stories now as the Union do. And we've seen both the academies in Texas churn through a lot of players. Dallas, the better case of the two. But Houston hasn't really gotten that from their guys. But they don't spin. So to get to this point, I mean, you could argue last year was the outlier. This year is probably more in line of what you would expect from that team given their outlay, and we don't know how long that's going to last. Is somebody going to come by Elise? Kyoto says he wants to go to Europe. Mauro Minotas is making the jump. Maybe somebody comes in for him. What happens in the future? That's TBD. What happens in this game, Bobby, that they can control?
Well, to start the basic, I want to point out that I think we all think that this is actually a very good team at their best, that Houston has had a lot of things go wrong, and you mentioned they lost Cabezas. There's probably, 20 teams in Major League Soccer who have a guy that they would lose and they would not be in the playoffs, right? Maybe there's three or four that, are good all the way through, but almost every team, and we don't often know who that guy is, right? But there's a guy on a team that if they lose him, and for this team, for this year,
he's their Diego Chara.
The other thing I want to point out about that, I was never high in 2017 team, because if you put your faith in Mercurial wingers, I just don't trust it, right? Elise and Kyoto and Minotas are incredible. But when you just think about, players who are consistent, going back to the consistent theme, players you can trust day in and day out over a season, I just wouldn't trust wingers, and they are their essential whole
team. That's a demon talking right there.
Right? Sure. Well, it also came out to be true this year, right? Like, Cabezas is the foundation, but Elise and Kyoto and Monotas are really that team, and it comes down to them playing well. Maybe Cabezas makes them play better. We could dig into that another time. But this team is dependent on Elise playing well, and when Elise hasn't been playing well the last 2 months and definitely hasn't been scoring or finishing, they haven't been as good. So that's how I break down this team.
Mind-blowing here. I said the Union have negative goal differential, and yet they are 11 points clear of DC and 7th in the East. The Dynamo are plus 4 goal differential, and they're nowhere close. They're not even going to sniff the playoffs this year. But they got the – what's this?
Because when Elise and Kyoto play well, they can score a lot of goals and blow teams out.
It's more than that. It's because when they don't – when they give up the idea of we're going to hold on to the ball and we're going to be the team that creates pretty goals, when they say, you go ahead and have the ball, as soon as you turn it over, try to catch us, they kill teams. They killed Atlanta. They killed Toronto. They killed NYCFC. They destroyed Portland a couple of weeks ago because all these teams walked up the field thinking they were going to pass around and create these pretty goals. This is why I think it's a really bad matchup for the Union, because the Dynamo have given up the idea that they're going to be a possession team. Over the last 3 weeks, they've had a come-to-Jesus moment, and they've re-embraced their identity as a counter-attacking team. They have Cabezas back. He played a little bit the last 2 weeks, I think it was. And Philly's going to get all over the ball, and they're going to try to walk up the field. And if they have anything approaching the types of turnovers they committed against Montreal 2 weeks back, Houston's going to beat them 4-1.
It's almost like Philly should play Warren Cravall or Derek Jones in their midfield three. They wouldn't be as good.
I get what you're thinking. It just feels overthinking it a little bit. You know, like you have to go out with your best 11. And at this point, it's pretty well established that their best 11 includes Madunia.
We gave the Union side, it would be validation for their project. This win, this Open Cup, this silverware, this night where you are top of Major League Soccer news stack, you're lifting something, you're bathing in confetti, you're popping champagne, and it's a beautiful night. Matt, you and I were there last year. Mm-hmm. It was maybe the highlight of my year.
It was really, really good barbecue.
The important things. Yeah. I'm going to get that, by the way, in Houston.
Heard that the Houston barbecue isn't nearly as good as elsewhere in Texas, but their Indian food is out of this world. Just saying.
Okay. That's good.
That's my scouting report.
A little mixture there, Vietnamese Creole. Might try that out.
Yes. Oh, my God.
What does this mean for the Dynamo? We kind of made it this big picture validation point for the Union if they win. What does an Open Cup win mean for Houston, Bobby?
Momentary pleasure.
Yeah.
Just momentary relief.
A trophy is always a trophy, right?
Yeah, but it's true. It'd be huge, right? That'll stick forever. We'll always remember them as winning a trophy in 2018, but I don't think it says anything about the larger scheme of soccer or their club or Major League Soccer.
How do you expect the game to play out? What do you see happening?
Exactly like what Matt said. And I will point out that this isn't a new thing. You know, you look around the world, a lot of teams who aren't the biggest in the country that do make a deep cup run, they put all their emotional and physical energy into the cup run, and they struggle throughout the year. I mean, a trophy is still a trophy. It'd be nice to have MLS Cup, but Open Cup's still pretty dope. But I think Matt's right. I think Philly have a lot of the ball. And if Houston hits on their counters, Houston's probably going to win.
Did Wilmer Cabrera make a mistake playing his first team this weekend against Orlando, in Orlando?
Feels like it.
Because Curtin rests his guys, most of them at least, gets some little cameos, beats Sporting Kansas City at home, good result for them, they keep rolling into this game, whereas Wilmer plays almost all his guys. It's a nil-nil dire game in Orlando, and now you got to come back home and figure it out.
As a player, I would have rather been on short rest than too long a rest. I would have rather tried to recoup 4 days later opposed to having 10 days of nothing. You could have put a friendly in there, but it's not the same. So I would guess Wilmer went to the players, as he often does in these situations, and asked, and they probably would have wanted to play.
All right, I want your predictions. We'll get to another big question here in just a second, which is who would you rather see in CCL in 2019? Because one of these teams are going to the CONCACAF Champions League. How's this go down? Philly, they've lost twice at home. They go on the road. Are they getting over the hump? Are the Dynamo going to remind us that, you know what, if they just buckle down and play simply, they're actually really effective?
Mm-hmm. That last one. I think Houston's going to go out there with the idea that they're going to absorb pressure and they're going to hit on the counter, and I think Elise is going to get loose. It'll be a good game, but Houston wins.
Bobby?
You know, if there's
this
one...
This is existential for you.
You got to get off the bus. You got to get off the bandwagon predict a Union win.
Philadelphia's had the better season. They're probably the better overall year. But if there's one thing I've learned in this godforsaken sport is that justice is not a thing and nothing makes sense. And I do think if you just look at the breakdown of these two teams in Houston with the way they play, Dynamo.
Okay, I'll go with my heart. I'll go with my heart here. I love Houston. I think it's a great city. I got a ton of family there. I just think this year, if you're going to reward one team for what they've done, and I think this is kind of – that's what these games are in a lot of ways. It's kind of a reward.
Say it, dude. Say the word.
Union. Union.
Weeby believes in the soccer gods.
Wheelies. Buses with flames out the back, just off into a blaze
of
glory.
You try and take over this bus.
You know what? That just happened. You're off the bus. Yeah, you just passed me the keys. I locked the doors behind me. We're not making the stop at Bobby Warshaw's house anymore in the morning. You're going to be just standing there waving as we go by. Union bandwagon, baby. I'm all over it. CCL. That's the trickle down here. Of course, it's a trophy, and whoever wins it, CCL. That is another prize. It's not just that like moment of glory. It's, oh, you, by the way, you have another front next year.
Yeah.
You've got to join what is now Sporting Kansas City and Toronto FC and TBD for MLS Cup champions and probably Atlanta United in the Champions League field. Who do you want to see there? Who would represent MLS best in Champions League jumping straight into that round of 16?
It's not even a question that it's the Union. It's not even like CCL is all about depth. It's all about having the pieces to put on the field and handle the grind of that competition. And we saw it this past weekend. The Union now have a ton of depth. And Houston, they lost one guy, and they lost their season.
On the flip side, if you were to say which team can go to Mexico, can go to Honduras, can go to Saprissa, and get a result, you would pick Houston, right? If Houston were to play their first 11, we love Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we'd feel super confident with Philly going to get an incredibly hard result in El Salvador, just with the way they play. But Houston, with the lease in Kyoto.
I would have a lot more confidence in Philadelphia going to El Salvador, anywhere in Central America, where they're going to have more of the ball, and they're going to have...
Well, they're not going to go there, by the way.
But it's hot.
That's true. There's going to be...
This new CCL. It'll be Mexico. It'll be Costa Rica. It might be another MLS team.
Right.
It's probably not going to be kind of that middle ground where you're like, oh, we should dominate this game.
But I would definitely say Houston are more suited to going to Mexico, where you're going to have 25 or 30% of the ball, and you're just going to have to play on the counter the whole time.
Does that change based on January?
Yeah, it does.
Because no matter team that gets there, they're going to have to reinforce. Yeah. I mean, you're going to get a little extra allocation money. Who would you put more faith in to reinforce? Now, by the way, the Union spent $2 million more this year than they did last year. Now, that's David Akam, that's Bork Dochgal. They made some moves. Meanwhile, basically dead even were the Houston Dynamo. Who would you trust to invest more in January with an eye to it? And who would you trust more to prioritize this competition?
I mean, I feel like it's the Union the whole way through. Like, this team, they went out this past winter and they got David Akam and they brought in Bork, Dochgal as well. That's a big commitment. I don't expect them to spend another $3.5 million on two players next year, but I think they would definitely spend something. Houston is a little more up in the air, I think. And beyond that, again, the Union get reinforcements out of their academy. They get reinforcements. They get starters out of the super draft still. Jack Elliott's a starter. He was a fourth round pick, 77th pick in the 2017 super draft. So one way or the other, I would expect Philly to bring in reinforcements. I don't necessarily feel the same way about the Dynamo.
U.S. Open Cup Final, 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. ESPN2, Univision Deportes. Watch that thing. Check out the trophy lift on ESPN3 or ESPN+. And then come join us, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. We have got the post-game show for the second year running. David Gass out there gathering interviews, I don't know, maybe dancing with people.
I want to hear more about this Vietnamese Creole food.
Yeah,
that sounds amazing.
It's supposed to be incredible.
All right, you going to be on the Snapchat?
Yeah, Instagram
or on Instagram?
Yeah, follow me on that one. Right. Kaylin Carr there to cover the Houston Dynamo side. Come hang out with us. And if you don't subscribe right to our Extra Time Radio, go ahead and do it. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. We're going to get a break on the other side, the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, in the green room. Ben Bear has joined us. It is a Monday,
And Ben has some programming notes from the U.S. Open Cup. And if you want to watch our conversation, you, of course, can do that on MLSsoccer.com or any of our social media channels. Ben.
Oh, I thought you meant this conversation.
No, not this one. The U.S. Open Cup one.
Got it.
You're more of a mailbag guy right now.
Did you just call me?
No, I said you're a super sub.
Did you say I have a face for radio? But
no,
not saying that.
You said that. I didn't say anything.
I'm pretty sure that's what you just said.
And you have a voice for editorial content.
Wow.
Okay,
anyways.
So we've got that out of the way.
Yeah,
but
anyway,
you had some
what?
Yeah,
news, yeah. I don't. Oh, yeah. The game is on ESPN2 on Wednesday.
Open Cup.
And it's going to be streamed on Univision Deportes.
Correct.
So you can find it in their app or your TV provider app or whatever,
yeah.
any of those.
So just watch it on ESPN2.
Yeah, just watch on ESPN2.
That's the point. And then the post-game show, of course, is thanks to Extra Time Live, driven by Continental David Goss. We're hoping for a champagne shower for him. He got soaked last year. That was a good time. We'll get whatever it is, whichever team wins, that post-game speech from the coach in the locker room, the showers, all the interviews, all the celebrations.
If the road team wins, do we know how big the – because usually, typically, like, road locker rooms are pretty small.
Yeah.
So how are we going to get Goss and if Philly wins?
What are you trying to say about Goss?
I'm just saying how are we going to – it's going to be pretty tight quarters.
He has a large
there
personality.
With a camera.
Yeah,
with a camera.
Was he actually
Goss
doused with champagne
correct
last
yeah
year?
Yeah, that was –
or was it was just sweat?
No.
It was actually just sweat.
You're right.
I mean, anything
Kansas
over
City
44 degrees.
No, I mean, no, Goss, that was one of the best shows that we've done.
Yeah, that was
– that was great.
What I'll say for
Dave. I was
Dave
home. It was Rosh Hashanah, I think, or one of the
yeah
Jewish holidays. And I was just watching Goss get doused by every single
yeah
Kansas City player live.
I mean, that is Dave's, like, perfect kind of – you can't figure it out. Is it sweat? Is it champagne? Like,
yep,
that's his broadcasting dream right there. into the mailbag, 401-206-0-MLS. You can watch the postgame show, of course, on the MLS channels.
I'm going to interrupt again. When you said Ben had breaking news, I thought it was going to be about 22 under 22.
Oh, are we allowed to say anything about that?
It's coming. Soon. Very soon.
It's like winter.
Yeah, we're basically like the Stark family right now.
And it's 22 under 22.
It is 22 under 22, no longer.
Because I live for these false equivalencies, who would we all be in the Stark family? Who do you think you would be, Ben? What would your position be?
Yeah, definitely Jon Snow.
Definitely Jon Snow?
Mm-hmm. You definitely don't want to have sex with your cousin.
Oh, my God. Oh. Spoiler alert.
Wait, well, you're not – no, like,
people,
that's like 8 steps of spoilers right there.
Are there still spoilers for Game
yes
of Thrones, or
yeah
we're past those? No, we're no, if you're still
I
getting
mean
spoiled on Game of Thrones,
if
you deserve
if
it.
If he had said the name of the character that mm-hmm he's referencing, then I think that would have been a spoiler. I think the way he said it, which you'd have to have watched even like 5 seasons or whatever they revealed it, then you'd know what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all
on some shows. I would maybe go in there and, you know, you don't want to know how the sausage is made. I might go in there and edit that joke out today. That joke stays. Bobby Warshaw on fire. We're letting that one stand.
Mostly because you're too lazy to go in.
Exactly. Dave isn't here. Anonymous via Hot Take Hotline. When the Union wins CCL next year, will it count as a treble after they win U.S. Open Cup and MLS Cup this year? So I did not check the area code on this one, but I'm guessing Mechanicsburg, PA is
the little 717 number.
Yeah,
that was from one of Bobby's burgers.
Either that or that's a terrible jinx on the Union, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anonymous via the Hot Take Hotline.
Are we going to answer the question?
No, Ben.
Nah, I mean,
I think it's accepted.
Confused.
It's accepted that the treble would be Shield, MLS Cup, and CCL. What Toronto did last year, I took the calling, and I think everybody should call it the domestic treble, right? Because it's different for Canadian teams and American teams. The domestic treble in Canada is Canadian Championship plus Shield plus MLS Cup. In the U.S., it's U.S. Open Cup plus Shield plus MLS Cup.
I appreciate the level of thought you brought to that.
Yeah, that was good.
Some of us think before we do stuff, Weeby.
We should move on.
All right. Anonymous, again, via the Hot Tech Hotline. I may have to cut down on the anonymous. Give me your name and your location. Just do it. Given the Chad Marshall theory, it's the theorem, by the way. Who is the best center back in MLS, and why is it Jonathan Mensah? I did check this one straight out of Columbus, baby. Jonathan Mensah, my defender of the year in 2017. he got better. Who's the best center back in MLS right now? Is it Chad Marshall? Is it still Chad Marshall? Is it somebody else? Is it LGP? Is it Beasley or Opara? Is it...
Do one of you have a strong opinion on this?
Not really.
No.
Well, I'm going to reframe then so we don't have a great answer. Chad Marshall would probably be our answer if we all had to pick, mm-hmm, right? Maybe Michael Parkhurst. Can I say the most
not
talented, like the guy who might just be the best overall soccer player, LGP?
Eh.
ability to read the game, athleticism, passing out of the back.
I think his ability to read the game is not
lacking.
Yeah, not as. I don't want to say lacking because it's clearly up there, but I don't think he's the top tier in that regard.
I don't know that there's one these days.
No, there's
I don't
not.
Know that there's
Ike was clearly
Matt
it
Hedges,
last year.
I think Matt Hedges, you want to have that conversation. I mean, he has to be in that conversation. Mm. Is Parker
he's just
or
so prone. He's like almost, he's just prone to some mistakes.
Okay, there's a lot of
defenders
in this league prone to mistakes. But
he's supposed to be the steady guy, and he's just not always that steady.
Okay. Red Bulls, Parker, Long, either of those guys in the conversation?
I think so. But they, like you said,
well, what are we talking about the best defender
there's
or
no
the
one guy.
Are we talking about the defender of the year?
We're talking about the center back. We were just saying the best center back in the league.
Yeah, like based on pure talent, I think LGP is right there.
All right.
If that's we're not if this is not based on performance, then that's right. He's right there.
Well, that's weird.
I mean, he's probably also that? Like he's what? He's like fifth or sixth. He's probably the defender of the year voting. If I had to guess.
Anonymous via Hot Tech Hotline. I'm on Team Narrative with Andrew. I'm a U.S. national team fan through and through. But come on, guys, some Miazga payback would be hilarious fun. Give me those memories that will fuel the rivalry, and I'm happy. I just read that just so I'd have somebody agreeing with me and not hating on me.
I don't want fun. I want winning.
Okay. Rob Green hit us up on Twitter. On Thursday's show, he says, we debated if Toronto 2017 can claim greatest team of all time or just the greatest season in light of their disastrous campaign this time around. If Atlanta hits 70 points, wouldn't Toronto lose on both claims?
Nope. Toronto won every trophy they played for last year. Atlanta did not do that.
Who would win? Atlanta 2018 at their best? Toronto 2017 at their best. I'll take Toronto.
Yeah,
I was going to take Toronto.
I
was going to take Toronto
and
as well.
That's another way to ask this question. The best team ever. Yeah, clearly a dynasty matters over longevity, but just a single moment in time that lasts, we'll say, 6 to 8 months.
I also think it's easy to take Toronto right now, given that they did win everything. So you saw them at the top of the heap repeatedly, it was just proven. You know, in a pressure situation in 2017, one team can't on top. That's Toronto FC. Atlanta does not yet have that proof.
And Atlanta, in the Open Cup game they lost, they played their starters. It's not like they ran out, a bunch of scrubs.
At home.
They played their starters at home,
and
they lost.
And Atlanta can rightfully say that Canadian Championship is not necessarily equivalent to the Open Cup. But what is equivalent is that you have to win all your home games.
Yeah, who do they beat?
So
did they beat one MLS team before they lost to Chicago?
I don't think so, no.
They beat some USL team.
They beat a USL team.
And
with
then
their
they lost to Chicago.
They lost
so
to Chicago.
So 63
whereas
points,
with
games
Toronto,
left.
In Toronto, it's
the
like they're going, axe handles and machetes against Montreal every year in the Canadian Championship. So
Atlanta United can get to 75 points based on games, points available.
If they go run through the playoffs and win MLS Cup, it's going to be a discussion.
I agree.
For sure.
I mean, look, if they hit 75, it's going to be a discussion.
It's also a little bit underappreciated just how dominant Toronto were in MLS Cup. Like, I think that's the most dominant MLS Cup performance at least since Columbus in 2008 and maybe of all time. So
it's definitely the most dominant since I've been locked in.
That's what matters.
Which is really what matters.
John in D.C.
The Ben
Bear
era.
Yeah,
that's
AB,
what it is.
How many
Ben Bear slash Opta.
Right, how many years AB is this, would you say, after Ben? So
it's like 8 years. So,
okay, we're 8 AB. That's the time for all of you. Keep it dragging home. John in D.C., if MLS wants teams to care about the Campeones Cup, make it a part of All-Star Week since teams are already taking a break during that window. Not sure how that works for Liga MX schedule, but it might be a better fit than what they have now. Well, that ain't probably not going to happen. You got to have it after Campeones de Campeones because that's what Liga MX is sending.
Campeones.
Yeah, whatever. The champion of champions.
Champions of champions.
There was a point like 3 years ago where Weeby was really starting to learn Spanish, and that you just let go of that, didn't you?
No. I messed
up
the plural.
Some of the things
singular.
Came up. Some of the things
up
came
the
up.
Plural singular.
Conjugate!
One guy.
I mean, that's really stupid. It's a champions guy, of champions.
One
champion
guy downloads Duolingo, and then it's just like you can't. And he drinks like 500 cocktails on a beach in Mexico, and he's like, "I got this, guys.
True, man.
I'm
I will
down.
Make you. I will
Uno
make
mas.
You some very good
Uno
mezcal.
Mas. Por favor.
Un doble. Por favor.
Very
yeah.
good mezcal cocktails, my friends.
Martin, a Swede who's not surprised that Stara did not succeed at San Jose, he says the Quakes look dreadful, but I keep being surprised by the ability of Danny Huijsen. I think that if you replaced Josep Martinez with him in Atlanta, you'd still have a 25-goal striker.
Yes, the old Greg Lalas question here. I love it.
So many teams have made that mistake with Danny Huijsen over the years. Like, he looks the part. He checks every box that you want to see from a guy in terms of soft feet, you know, good physical presence, sometimes makes really good runs, but he has under-delivered. Like, this is far and away his best season as a striker, and he has 11 goals in 28 games.
This email is just like aphrodisiac to Danny Hoyson's agent. He's like, yes, everyone see this in my
Bobby
client.
Just looks like he's thinking, so I'm feeling like he has an answer.
I know when Bobby's thinking and when he wants to say something. Right now, Bobby doesn't want to say anything.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Anonymous here, the Hot Take Hotline. I was wondering what your guys' favorite fan traditions are. I only know of the Timbers Army cutting a log after goals and Minnesota United singing to their fans after wins. Do you anybody have a favorite fan tradition?
Well, I mean, there's two here I would say are twist and shout after Red Bull score a goal. It's always fun. And then NYC is just chicken bucket.
I don't know if that's tradition. Is that tradition? Either.
It's kind of taken, if you go to an NYC game now, like, everyone just tells the chicken bucket.
I always struggle like when I'm these questions that are like, okay, go through all of your memory right now and figure out what the favorite are. I was just one that I was watching the other day because I was going back through the Open Cup last year. We were on the field watching Matt Beisler, and Jimmy Nielsen's done it before it, and so on and so forth.
Paint the wall,
which I think is a really, really cool tradition. And absolutely. I kind of wish, you know, you said it on that broadcast last year, like, let that stay.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not permanently, but for the next year, kind of let it be raw and let it be real and let it be Matt Beisler's shaky hand riding up on a, you know, on a tree cutter rig.
I love that. Yeah. And I stand by that. Like, let it stay for at least a year and then, you know, add the permanent one or replace it. My favorite fan tradition, DC fans, I love their tradition of not showing up when their team is bad.
That's not what I was thinking.
You should have known. When he sets it up like that, you walked right into that one.
I was going to say the stands bouncing. I thought Doyle was going to say that, too.
You just got
me, dude. Good job. Yeah.
You got one, Bobby?
This is all without saying that the two obvious, the Dupe goal chant.
Yeah, Dupe.
And Dupe's RSL, we're here for RSL.
We're here for RSL.
Hall of Fame.
That's obviously Sam's favorite.
That's Pantheon level.
The fact that Dave and I Dave and I ran into an RSL fan in Central Park when we were doing pre-filming for the Rivalry Week game, who was wearing his RSL jersey in Central Park on business from Utah and comes to New York, wears the RSL kit, comes and finds us, and then plays pickup. And we sang the song with him.
Of course, because that's Pantheon level. Uh-huh. Bobby, do you have anything?
If you have a...
I have the original MLS tradition, which was the bouncing stands at RFK.
Okay. If you've got one out there, let us know what you think your favorite tradition is, whether you're a part of it or you just see it from afar. Turkey Leg Neil usually hits us up from Metro North. I don't think this one was. He says he's coming back from Montreal after seeing a, quote, scoreless 1-1 draw. NYCFC in the past 2 months have earned 4 points in Canada and only 6 in the U.S., so I don't really feel like asking about what Dom needs to do to fix this. Instead, I'm wondering, what's been the most chilling moments you have experienced from the stands? He says one of his is 150 away fans belting out the Star Spangled Banner and hearing it echo through Stade Saputo. That's near the top of his list. I'm going to go outside of MLS for mine that really stand out, at least. I have a ton of really fun MLS ones, too. But one would be Croatia-Brazil in Sao Paulo to kick off the 2014 World Cup. That was, you know, you could just kind of feel the whole country stop. And I remember, like, trying to get into that game. It was like wading through a sea of bodies all clad in yellow. And then the other one is in Panama, Sanssouci game. The way that those fans got yanked back and forth and yo-yoed in and out of the World Cup and in and out of that playoff and Mexico and Costa Rica, and you could see when the results came in and they would be celebrating in a stoppage in play, and you're like, what is going on? You try to refresh on the terrible Wi-Fi, and then the moment that Zusi broke their hearts just thinking like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. Like, something might happen. And, of course, it didn't. Props to Canaleros fans.
Mm-hmm.
But that entire game was just kind of like – goosebump inducing. Those are my two.
For me, most of mine are not soccer related, but Canada before the two MLS Cups the past couple of years, that was really cool.
Yeah. Oh Canada is a very underrated anthem.
Oh yeah, it's
chronically cool. So I loved the Campeones Cup as well. What's for you, Bobby? You got one?
Mine was my freshman year at Stanford, a women's soccer game. Portland came to town in the NCAA tournament when Portland was one of the powers. Rapinoe was on their team. So it was like Kelly O'Hara, Kristen Press, Megan Rapinoe. There were like 10 national team players in the field. People were hanging from the tree. You know, 3,000 people in the stadium. There must have been 5,000 people watching from all over. Stanford scored in like the last minute to win, just like one of the cooler soccer things I've ever seen. I'm a sucker for people packed into small stadiums.
Yeah.
I'd rather like 17,000 in a 13,000 stadium than like 50 in a 50.
So Bobby's never going to be like a fire marshal, for instance. That's not a calling for you.
Low-key for me was the 2012 season with the Quakes, the game against the Sounders, where I think it was Lenhart got a last-minute – they came back from like 3-1 down and won 4-3 or something like that with like three goals past the 85th minute at Buckshaw, and that place erupted. Yep. It was awesome. I love Buckshaw.
Another one, by the way, going into the Gold Cup, the Geiger game. The Geiger game in Atlanta. That was truly insane. I'll try to think of my MLS ones. I have a ton. There's a lot to go through sometimes. David in Seattle. He's a Sounders season ticket holder, Seattle Rain fan, U.S. Women's National Team, Men's National Team, Chicago Sting fan back in the days. He's been listening to Extra Time Radio since the Nick and Simon era, and he finally felt the need to write in after Bobby and Andrew's comments on grassroots coaching. I agree with them that training would be wonderful for grassroots coaching, and U.S. is an online track for $25. However, they have no clue what the problem is because they're not part of the solution. They talk about grassroots, but are they participating in it? Do they coach, ref, or run clinics for grassroots programs? Bobby can speak to that.
Or you and I? Was that the question, or is U.S. soccer?
Yeah. You and I think. Yeah.
Your involvement in grassroots soccer.
You had a big
soccer.
Win here recently.
We did. You guys, I coached my first game with this new club. I often miss the games because we're here at work and the other coach takes over. But I do. I do a nonprofit team here in New York. We talk about being involved in pay-to-play. So I do a nonprofit team here in the Bronx. Under 16, my guys are awesome. They've been that's my favorite time of the week is going to coach them every, you know, two or three times a week.
I thought your favorite part of the week was mass confrontation.
Listen, you're in the top five.
Okay.
Matt. Good to
yeah. I got nothing for you on that one other than as soon as my kid is of age, I will be spending, I'm sure, three or four nights a week coaching teams as well, as my dad did before. And, look, if you do coach, if you ref, if you run clinics, if you're part of grassroots, props to you. David in Seattle continues. The biggest problem is access to programs and space. I coach and volunteer for Lake City Soccer in Seattle, Brian Schmetzer's club from when he was a kid. We have trouble just finding enough people to coach. We had to turn away players because we could not get enough coaches. These are kids that want to play. The lack of coaches stems from the fact that the parents that can afford it to have time away from work are the ones most likely to put their kids in pay-to-play clubs. The parents, uncles, aunts, brothers, and sisters that do coach are squeezing it into busy schedules. We need more people who are involved in the sport full-time to get involved at the grassroots levels regularly on a volunteer basis. U.S. soccer should require licensed coaches to volunteer a certain number of hours at grassroots level to maintain their licenses each year. This could be coach training, clinics for grassroots teams, referee training, or just helping to organize a grassroots club.
So I think about this every single day because this is what my club experiences. So when I go to coach for, you know, the 2 hours, two or three times a week, we have six teams on the field. Each half is split into thirds, and each full 15 to 20 person team gets a third of that. For coaching, you know, it's a nonprofit club, and they raise money throughout the year, and there's tutoring and all that, but it's really hard to get coaches because, you know, maybe there's one coach every other age group who's paid. The rest of us are volunteer, and how do you get people to show up often enough who are volunteer, particularly if you're qualified? I mean, I see this on a daily, weekly basis now. Yeah, the struggle is real if you don't have resources to get field time, to get coaches. We never enough cones, we never enough balls, so... Yeah.
I think one of the things that we've talked about a lot on this show about the future is providing places to play that don't cost, that don't have to necessarily be reserved, or if they do, that come at a price that people can afford. That is such a key, is to give kids the opportunity to go do it either on their own time or to prevent the price that ultimately their families themselves, their communities have to pay to give them that opportunity. And, you know, hopefully U.S. soccer is looking into those things, but as he said as well, we can all do our part to make this thing better. Let's see. I just missed his name here. I'll come back to it. Oh, Sean Lopez in Belmont, California. First, a comment. I've taken my daughter to MLS games with headphones on. It was not to protect her ears, but because some kids are really sensitive to sounds. She loves the game, and she'd break out in tears every single time the home team scored and the crowd roared. It's not helicopter parenting. That parent would stay home and just watch TV. Now, a question for you guys. There's been so much talk in recent months about youth coaching and especially the need for affordable coaching license programs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the American context, soccer is the only major sport where coaching licenses are a thing. Steve Kerr did not take a course. He played the game at a high level and worked his way up. Pete Carroll did not take a course. He played the game in college and worked his way up the food chain. How about Alex Cora this year with the Red Sox? Where's his coaching license? I'm actually going to cut in right there, Sean. USA Basketball. has a series of coaching licenses. You cannot be an NCAA coach without having the proper license in
many sports. I don't
think
you can even be a high school coach
right.
for basketball.
This is normal procedure for these folks. Now, he says he played rec soccer for years and then stepped in to coach his daughter's youth team. Good stuff from you, Sean. The first year he learned a ton. The second year was much better. And by year three, I had really thoughtful, age-appropriate drills, formations, and tactics. I imagine I could keep going up age levels and get better with experience. I just think the coaching bag thing sometimes feels like a racket. And I wonder if it stifles creativity, sometimes in addition to creating a financial barrier for some of our most enthusiastic and experienced soccer people. Any thoughts there, guys? I think training is extremely important in every walk of life, and professional improvement and personal improvement are very important. So, Sean, number one, props to you, man, for getting out there and getting your hands dirty and doing this for your daughter and her friends and her teammates and for your community. So, A1 right there. B, I do think there is value in coaching education.
I've always thought the coaching courses were a racket. I plan to take them and, like, learn firsthand so I can talk about them more intelligently. But the people I've seen go through the coaching courses, I haven't seen come out better for it. So I'm curious what other people that have been through it really think about this.
And there's the caveat that you haven't been in it, but I don't think that's an isolated thought. And I think U.S. soccer over the last few years has talked a lot about improving those courses and making them more financially attainable for the vast majority of people.
Yeah. And that's – I don't automatically think because that's the way it's done in Europe that makes it perfect and – you know, that's the ideal and that's what we should do. But, like, we should look at how Germany and Spain, in particular those two, do their coaching courses and do their coaching licensing and make sure that we're trying our best to sort of follow their lead on it because they're doing it so much better than anybody else right now. And that does mean licenses and that does mean courses. And it might be a racket to an extent, but –
I think something.
I think that if we don't have it, it caps us. It creates a ceiling on how high we could rise as a soccer nation.
I think it might be a little bit for someone like you, Bobby, who has played soccer his entire life, who has played soccer at the highest levels you can play. I'm not intelligent enough to say what they are and what they aren't, but it may be for someone like
You're pointing at me.
I'm pointing at the Texans. They did not play at a high level.
Yeah,
they were
Sean
not
Lopez.
Involved in these high training set, these very high level training sessions. They don't may not know exactly how to set the cones and all that kind of stuff.
These are two different things, though. Like at the very baseline, absolutely coaching is great, but it becomes a racket in the sense that you can't get in unless you have it. Right, the people that are making the decision that are allowing the fact that you can't coach in MLS without your license is the racket part.
I wouldn't say that's the record.
Yeah,
I
think it's much less about that and more about, we only have so many licenses for so many pathways to get a B license this year. And you need a B license if you want to coach a certain level and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a false scarcity in that sense. I think that's the racket. It's not at the MLS.
Yeah, once you get that high, it's not.
Because if you don't have your freaking license and you're trying to manage an MLS, good Lord.
I would say, you're looking more at, like academy level, a little bit lower than that.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
Having issues.
Here's the other thing about, ultimately you want to have formalized places, and informal, of course, for people to get together and discuss ideas about the game. And a lot of times that's what you hope that these training sessions are providing for coaches around the country to come together and not just create relationships with each other and lessen kind of the distance aspect that we have and the miscommunication aspect we have, but also share best practices. So big thanks right now to Dave in Seattle and Sean Lopez in Belmont, California for some thoughtful emails. Muffin Top Model on Twitter, Backpack Leash. There should be an Andrew Wiebe Backpack Leash Kid Award given to the defender of the game, week, month, season that's been all over the opponent's best player, pretty much neutralizing his ability to be effective or find open space to cause trouble. I like that one.
Did you guys know Weeby was a backpack leash kid?
We now do.
I found that out on Thursday.
Did you have any picadillos from your childhood? Any strange
things? I had when I was skiing, because I was a wild person, and I was skiing when I was like 3 or 4, I'd be on a leash.
Okay, so you were a leash kid too.
Yeah, but that was skiing. That wasn't just walking.
Yeah, well,
You're on a mountain.
I was a pretty fast walker.
You could, like, I could have been going too fast, crashed
really
into
fast
a tree or
walker.
Something, broken something. I'm not just walking down the street.
I'm going to call my mom tonight and just thank her for giving me a normal childhood.
Paul Feldman.
To be fair, they didn't have leashes in the 70s.
Paul Feldman via email.
You should have awards named. Actually, I think that's absolutely incorrect. I think it's been proven that they definitely did. Paul Feldman via email. You should have awards named after the show hosts for the players who exhibit that quality on the field for that each host brings to the studio. The Andrew Wiebe Award for the player whose performances are uninspiring and boring.
Nice.
But when he's not in the game, his team is erratic and error prone.
Nice.
He hurt me. He hurt me. He like really got me there with that first one. And then I felt much better on the back end.
That's good.
The David Goss Award. I was hoping Dave would be here, but he's in Seattle. The David Goss Award for the player who you still aren't sure what exactly he's good at, but he sure is exciting to watch. Which I think that one's pretty factually correct.
Flacco!
The Matt Doyle Award for the player who is clearly the best player on the field, but he's old and cranky, so he just can't play every week or he'll break down.
I am Zlatan.
Zlatan.
The Bobby Warshaw Award for the player who is all over the field and whose play makes you scratch your head, but you still have to admit he's good.
Wow.
I mean,
I don't know.
That was way too nice to Bobby. I was waiting for the hammer at the end.
The Ben Bear Award for the player who doesn't get in the game much and is really only remembered for the epic mistake he made a couple of years ago.
Joe Nanko.
Yeah.
Dang, dude.
Paul Feldman, thank you so much for those. Those are good. George and Queens.
Wait, that wasn't his name. What was that? Nasco.
Nasco. Yeah, Nasco. Joe Nasco. Yeah.
George and Queens to preempt Simon and Queens.
Everybody, if you've never heard of that name, go look up Joe Nasco.
Yeah, Google
greetings
that.
Shout out.
From George and Queens. Greeting Mr. Warshaw and the Left Backs. My note here is that Bobby Warshaw and the Left Backs is a great band name. Mm-hmm. That's a really good band name.
It's like a great garage band name from like 1964.
Well, yeah, what other kind of band is Bobby going
to
be
in? Which Doyle listened to at prom?
Doyle was in. He fronted them.
Wow. It's got nothing on Social Octopus, just for the record.
To Bobby's point from a couple shows back about the Galaxy having a desirable amount of talent in their team, imagine Triple G, 3G, Greg Berhalter taking over the LA Galaxy with their current squad. The team is talented. Guys are just playing badly. Berhalter can get them to play well and win games. He's proven that he's an excellent motivator and organizer. It's a players' league, but you need a real leader keeping everyone on the same page. With Greg Berhalter as manager, are the LA Galaxy a playoff team this year?
Yes. Yes.
How many teams in the league, if they had Greg Berhalter, wouldn't make the playoffs?
Three.
Yeah, there's not a ton. The Rapids wouldn't. I'm going to say Orlando wouldn't have.
I'm going to say the Fire as well. I just don't think
they have the personnel. I don't know, man. I think if you gave
although the East is wide open at the very end.
Schweinsteiger to Greg Berhalter, that team would get 50
And Nicholas, how many goals would Nicholas score?
Yeah. Nicholas would score 25, 30 goals, wouldn't he?
Polster being healthy would be important. Vincent Polster would really fit his system well.
Yep.
Here's an aside from George. He saw ETR legend in my home borough of Queens. Totally made my day. I was even listening to an episode of the pod when I saw him. How funny is that? Mr. Simon Borg hurried past me I was exiting the subway in Forest Hills. Sadly, when I actually realized it was him, he had disappeared past the turnstile.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Simon's always moving, man.
Very on the move.
Probably to send us a few Slack
We end here with Simon. Speaking of Slack, I told him that Jesmond was brought up on this show. Here was his response. Actually, I was thinking about me and Jesmond while watching Lucho and Wayne Rooney. Jesmond would be Lucho. I'm Waza. That's from Simon. So now you know which side of Lucha Roo Simon Borg is on.
Wait, time out. God. Okay, wait. He was imaginary, wasn't he?
I don't think so. I think Jesmond was real. But
I thought he was imaginary. No, I'm like.
No, I'm pretty sure Jesmond was real.
We're calling Simon.
Yeah,
right
we'll hit up Simon. If you have any other ETR lore, any other like past ridiculousness that you want to bring out, Jam Spoons.
Jam Spoon's a classic one.
Simon trying to figure out how to navigate a wake.
The cake pop is the greatest article ever written on MLSoccer.com. Slash YouTube video if you find it.
It really is a tragedy that we lost the archives of those shows because there were almost just to listen to the first 10 minutes of each of them, which is basically Nick and I being like, Simon, what happened to you this week? What ridiculous thing are you involved in right now? It's okay. We still got a good crew here.
But search cake pop, MLSoccer.
You're going to tweet it after the show.
I've tweeted it multiple times.
Tell people your Twitter handle so they can see the cake pop article in video.
It's Elliot Tomes. No, sorry, Charlie Fiction. At Charlie Fiction.
That's not it, but we'll make him tweet it anyway. Hey, 401-206-0MLS. That's how to text us. Hit us up. Vent. U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2. Streaming on Univision Deportes as well.
Time out. I just remembered it. It's at FOLG.
Yep, got it. Yep, that's where you send all complaints as well. We got the postgame show, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, all the MLS channels. Check it out. Highlights, champagne showers, interviews. Maybe I danced with Latif Blessing last year. I don't know who I would dance with this year, but
I think, I mean, if you could do Trusty, the Pantera, I mean, this is a godsend.
Oh, that's true.
If you could do the Panterita with Albert Elise on the field after the game.
Well, that's a good suggestion. We'll keep that in mind. In the meantime, we'll see you on Thursday, everybody.